Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 33. Ben Flanagan of Aspect Radio. Graham Flanagan of Business Insider.
Hey, Graham. So, we lost another legend in movies. Unfortunately, James Horner, the legendary, longtime film composer, died tragically, was killed in a plane crash on Monday. And it just kind of, I mean, it was obviously a shocking surprise to the film community, to moviegoers, I'm sure the industry as well, and I'm sure, you know, obviously, most of all to his loved ones. So, you know, it's terrible to hear news like that, and you know, it's hard to reflect on, you know, the work he did immediately when, you know, somebody has lost somebody they loved in such a horrible and tragic way. But, you know, as film goers, that's how we knew him. It was through his work. And, you know, it's always an unfortunate thing when this happens, when, you know, we lose somebody, obviously, too soon, like James Horner, who I believe was 61 when he passed away and was still going strong as a film composer, still one of the best in the business today. And he obviously is somebody that we associate with so many great films and so many memorable scores. But, you know, one thing I think about with James Horner is themes. He's somebody who was so great and so adept at creating just instantly recognizable and memorable after the fact themes for these great movies, and so many titles come to mind. But I wonder if that's a feeling that you share about his work. And, you know, I just you should just go ahead and start listing off some of these great scores, because there's a lot to cover.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, my favorite James Horner score ever by far is the one he did for Braveheart in 1995. I think that's not only, in my opinion, his best, but also one of the greatest bodies of film music ever created for a specific movie. I mean, I went back and listened to it today. It is just absolutely powerful on its own. But then when it's incorporated into the actual movie, I mean, it makes that movie. And that to me is a classic, one of the best movies of the last, you know, one of the great epics ever made, one of the best overall movies that we've gotten in the last couple of decades. But that music especially, and I went back and played the song Sons of Scotland, which appears in the movie when William Wallace is sort of rallying his troops. And when you get to the 5 minute point, in that track, you just feel it. And it's just absolutely that Braveheart to me. And that's one that you and I, you know, we had the compact disc growing up, and we just wore that thing out.
Yeah, absolutely. And the track that I'm sure a lot of people go to and is one that probably wore the CD out. I would listen to that CD over and over in my Discman, and the track that I listened to probably more than any was called Freedom Execution Bannockburn. And it's the last, you know, it's the really the climax of the entire movie, obviously, where William Wallace is being tortured and, spoilers, executed. And then the aftermath of that, when you see the Battle of Bannockburn and Robert the Bruce is leading the Scottish army. And it's just unbelievable. I mean, we love the movie, but yeah, the movie would not be the movie without James Horner's music. Is absolutely beautiful music that you can, you know, hum and think about today, something that stirs emotions within moviegoers. And I think that that's a huge theme with his music, is it's emotional. And I think it was Matthew Stoller Zeitz, maybe, who said that he often scored sentimental works, but his music never sounded sentimental. It was emotional, and he knew the difference between the two, and I think that's pretty spot on. And stuff like Braveheart, and obviously it's amazing to me that that same year, after he had created one of his greatest scores in his career, he did it again with Apollo 13.
Thank you.
the Ron Howard movie that, you know, about the astronauts and the failed mission and the subsequent rescue, is just another just emotionally draining and uplifting score that matches, you know, in some ways, Braveheart note for note in terms of theme. I prefer the Braveheart one, but I just find it amazing that he was able to do it twice. It's always an impressive feat when a composer or a filmmaker is able to create that kind of, content so memorable and so impressive. And, you know, something that has always impressed me about James Horner, I think a word that's synonymous with his work is hope. And his music is something that makes you feel good. It makes you feel good about yourself and the world. Even if you're at your most cynical, if you listen to a James Horner theme like Braveheart or Apollo 13 or these others that we'll talk about, you'll feel good. And I think that's, you know, an ultimate compliment that you can give him. But, I mean, he was just, you know, I think that, you know, where you bring up the two scores we just did, you obviously have one of, you know, I think our mutual all-time favorites, like Glory, which was one of, I think, the first film scores that we really recognized and were affected by as we were watching the movie. But he was really versatile. I mean, I think people will, you know, look to things like those and Titanic and some of these others that have that hopeful tone and theme. But, I mean, you can go to stuff like, I mean, even early in his career, the adventurous and sometimes darker stuff in films like Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Aliens, even some action fare, like Arnold Schwarzenegger action fare, that was just kind of fun and appropriate for the time, Commando and Red Heat.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's known for his sort of iconic, sweeping orchestral scores like Braveheart, Glory, and Titanic. But like you said, the guy could do it all, and he worked constantly, nonstop. I mean, the guy was just a go-to, you know, sort of in the pantheon of active, working, great Hollywood composers. I mean, he was probably in the top five working today, you know, and his filmography speaks to that. You know, he's got random stuff in there like Milk Money and Hocus Pocus. You know, the guy just, he worked, just never stopped working. And to his credit, you know, but he you know, mixed in some truly unforgettable work. And you mentioned Glory again, like the music, and there's just some key scenes throughout where his music just really brings it home. I mean, especially the scene where Denzel Washington is punished and flogged. And also the final music over the closing credits. I mean, throughout Glory, I think that to me is the other one that stands out for me in terms of just the classic James Horner score. And I just wanted to just also touch on Titanic. You know, I haven't actually seen Titanic all the way through, and since I saw it in the theater, I've seen it in bits and pieces, but I've only seen that film once. But this is an example of where I actually did listen to the score of the movie. Our little sister Suzanne had the CD, and a lot of people did simply because of the Celine Dion song that was so popular. But that score is outstanding, and I remember I would listen to it based on solely on you know, the merits of the music that stood alone. And I remember back in like high school, I guess in 1998, I would listen to that score while I read the John Krakauer book Into Thin Air about the doomed Mount Everest expedition, and it sort of lent itself perfectly to the subject matter in that book. And I would just listen to that score on the loop constantly. And so you know, I've got a lot of great memories, both in terms of just listening to his soundtracks by themselves, you know, out of the context of the movie, but then in the movies themselves, it's like his music just completes these movies.
For sure. And I'm glad you singled out Titanic there. I mean, I was digging and researching back into, you know, his works, and Titanic is obviously one that sticks out because, you know, it's the second highest grossing movie ever, and it's also the only film for which he won Oscars. He won two. He won Best Score, and he also co-wrote the song My Heart Will Go On, so he got a Best Song Oscar, and he was nominated 10 times, which is really impressive, and he deserved it every single time and probably deserved even more than that for scores that we're talking about here that somehow weren't nominated. But, you know, I was going back and listening, and, you know, there's some great, great tracks with Titanic. I mean, everybody, I think, you know, at this point, My Heart Will Go On and aspects of Titanic are kind of a punchline for some people. It's kind of trendy to make fun of it, especially that song and sort of the corniness that, you know, that people associate with it. But, I mean, I was listening to a track called The Portrait, which is essentially an instrumental piano version of the song My Heart Will Go On, obviously referencing when Leo is drawing Kate Winslet in the film. But it's a really beautiful track and really one that I recommend people listen to. And there's another one, as the boat is leaving, I think it's called Leaving Port, that is just an instantly recognizable theme that has obviously been used in, you know, montages and commercials ever since, and trailers, I'm sure. So, I mean, there's some really good, really rich and good stuff there. But, you know, some of the other inspirational stuff that really sticks out, obviously, Cocoon has some really memorable music, and Field of Dreams. I mean, that movie wouldn't exist without James Horner's score, just to sort of create the majestic and mysterious elements that movie has. It's really beautiful. And, you know, there are some recent tracks. I mean, I'm kind of going back into the late 90s, and I remember being kind of, you know, I don't love this movie for a variety of reasons, but it's not because of James Horner's score, which is actually outstanding. But I think of a movie like The Perfect Storm, which caught me off guard with its theme. I think there's a track early in it, and you hear it throughout, kind of a motif. It's called Let's Go, Boys, I think, as they're getting ready to ship off into what will be a doomed expedition and fishing trip. But James Horner really brings it with that movie, even if the rest of the movie doesn't. But that's one I thought of. One of his most recent scores, which I thought was outstanding, and I go back to the theme thing. We live in this, obviously, this age of superhero movies where Marvel has just dominated Hollywood, it seems, with its output, impressive output of so many movies. But something that I've found that has been lacking with a lot of those movies is these films and these composers really establishing recognizable and memorable themes for these iconic characters. I think the exception that we have to make is obviously Alan Silvestri's Avengers theme, which is definitely the high point in scoring for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And you know, obviously Hans Zimmer has done some great work with the Dark Knight trilogy, and there have been some good scores, but I think that James Horner's theme for The Amazing Spider-Man, obviously not part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but the first film that Mark Webb made, that theme is outstanding. And I was actually disappointed that for the sequel, they sort of, you know, they just kicked it out the door and let Hans Zimmer create something entirely new, another outstanding score. But I just remember thinking as I was watching The Amazing Spider-Man, wow, like James Horner nailed it here. I mean, this is the new Spider-Man theme, and he deserves a ton of credit for creating a superhero score that people will identify this character with cinematically for years to come. Unfortunately, they scrapped that with the next film, but man, he really nailed it. So he was still going really strong even just a couple of years ago. He had, you know, a score coming up for Southpaw, this Jake Gyllenhaal movie coming out this year. I'm not sure if that's going to be the last one that we get from James Horner, but it just, you know, my anticipation level wasn't extremely high for Southpaw, but now that we've lost James Horner, it just makes me more excited to hear the music that movie has to offer.
Yeah, and he's also apparently started to do some work for the new Avatar movies, so we'll see how much he got accomplished or how much of his original work they're gonna incorporate into those movies. We'll see, but you can undoubtedly anticipate that some of these movies are going to come with dedications to James Horner at the end. And another one I wanted to quickly mention was in Aliens, that scene at the end where Ripley is fighting the Queen and she's in the big exosuit. I mean, that's sort of an iconic action, you know, intense action piece of scoring. You know, especially in terms of the percussion that's used in it. I mean, we've talked about his versatility, but man, he can really amp up an action set piece with his use of percussion. He does in a different way in Braveheart with his use of drums and you know, sort of old fashioned percussion that really, you know, pump you up and put you in that world.
Yeah, he definitely experiments. But another track from Braveheart that I really love, I think it's called The Legend Spreads, which emphasizes bagpipes. Mm-hmm. It's just this wonderful clip that you know, emphasizes the legend that is spreading throughout the country of William Wallace. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really wonderful, optimistic tune. And you mentioned Aliens, too. I've got this track correct, but I think it's Bishop's Countdown might be the name of it. If we're thinking about the same theme there, that plays, you know, multiple times, I believe, throughout that movie, and it's just amazing. Yeah, and it's something that has become a fixture in movie trailers. James Horner's responsible for that, so he's highly influential. I mean, another thing about the Aliens score is, I mean, we know James Horner for these, like you said, these sweeping, these hopeful orchestral suites that we get throughout these films. But I mean, you listen to something like Aliens, and again, it's darker, it's industrial, it's militaristic. I mean, It sounds like there's pikes banging together throughout the entire thing, and it really puts you on the edge of your seat, and it's really an amazing score. So, I encourage people to check that out. And, yeah, you know, to call him influential, I think, is an understatement, too. I mean, I think you can listen to his work. I mean, he's an Amblin guy, so, you know, he scored The Land Before Time, and, you know, the American Tale movies, Balto, the Zorro movies. So Amblin, he was a go-to guy for them. So, I think you can hear throughout a lot of his work the influence that John Williams had on him. But then I think that if you listen to something like the Saving Private Ryan soundtrack, I think you can perhaps hear some of the influence that James Horner may have had on John Williams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's no doubt that James Horner has a lasting legacy in not only, you know, film composing and as somebody who wrote so many memorable scores, but in film itself. He's just a name that's synonymous with so many great movies.
Yeah, and I mean, we're kind of entering a new era of film composing. While a lot of these guys from the 80s and 90s are still actively working, you've got guys like Giacchino and Alexander Desplat. But, you know, Horner, again, was part of this pantheon of guys like John Williams and Hans Zimmer and James Newton Howard and Danny Elfman and like Mark Isham and all these people that you just sort of would always see. It only feels right to just pay tribute and sort of give gratitude to everything that the guy contributed, because you know, his music was a big part of a lot of the movies that were big parts of our lives growing up. So it's really tragic, but man, what a body of work he left behind.
Absolutely, he's somebody who was just a wonderful ambassador to movies for us growing up. I mean, watching these opening credits and seeing, like you said,
these names that we would become accustomed to for the rest of our lives. Like you mentioned, the Danny Elfmans, the John Williams, the Elliot Goldenthals. James Horner was one of those names that just became so prevalent in these opening credits or closing credits, and his music is just going to, it's going to carry on forever, really. I mean, we're going to hear this music for the rest of our lives, and deservedly so. And it's a tragedy, to be sure, but all we can do now at this point is just celebrate the work that he did and the work that we'll get from him, like you said, perhaps in these Avatar movies and Southpaw. I'm sure he still has some great work left in him. So, yeah, unfortunate, but again, just got to celebrate it. And all hail James Horner. He was one of the great ones, true legend.
Absolutely.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com and aspectradioshow.com.